Bridget and Cody. Comedians discussing obscure books with witty commentary. Odd books, bizarre books, awful books, oddball books, slightly racist, super racist. Get your fix from Cody and Runjit.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Tomefoolery.
How you doing, Runjit?
I'm doing great, Cody. How are you?
I'm feeling all right. Feeling all right.
That's Cody Melcher. I am Runjit Sowry.
I am indeed, and he is as well.
That's right.
I'm glad we did this.
And today we have a very special guest. This is a podcast where we have guest comedians and discuss books.
Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah.
You could have read the introduction or anything on the online, but you know. You're busy. You've got things you've got to do, and so we're going to tell you. But let's go ahead and introduce our guest.
Let's do it. Our guest today is Mr. Danny Pudi.
Hey, Danny.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? I've been here the entire time they were talking, and I purposely waited to be introduced, which is a weird feeling to be...
You're breaking the fourth wall of
waiting
radio.
Waiting in the wings, people are just waiting to be introduced.
They thought you walked in the minute.
Although you want to chime in right away. I've been here the whole time, guys, and I will be here for
Surprise.
A while.
And we were making eye contact, too, which was really weird.
Yeah.
It scares me a little bit.
Yeah. That's a nice sweater.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's good.
Cardigan, surprise. You're in a short sleeve shirt, and it's the middle of winter in Chicago.
Yes.
Someone is warm-blooded.
I am. Very much so. I moved from Texas just because of that.
I figured. Okay. Yeah. Me and Runjit over here are cold people, I guess.
We are cold. We're Indians and cold.
Yeah,
well, there you go.
We don't belong here.
Yeah, sorry.
Now, Danny, probably most of you know this, but he is one of the stars of NBC's show Communities.
Mm-hmm.
Community. I started to say so, and then it sounded like Communities. Yeah.
He's the star of the show Comanities. It's about it's an underwater fish school.
Yeah.
It's on CBS, right?
The spinoff. We probably get more ratings.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
By the way, congrats on a fourth season.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you guys. Yeah, very excited. We're premiering in February, which will be our February. We'll have, I believe, our Halloween episode. March will include a Thanksgiving episode.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And April we'll have a Christmas episode. So we're throwing off the Roman calendar, I guess, or
nice, okay.
The regular calendar for everybody. But it'll be exciting. Looking forward to 2013.
Well done.
Excellent.
And also, real quick, just before we forget, and for those people who also do not like reading, why are you listening to the podcast? But anyway, we are talking today about The Dark Domain by, is it Stefan?
Yeah.
Stefan Grabinski.
Stefan Grabinski, and no, I'll save that for later.
Of course. Danny, as we do with all of our episodes, at least recently, we like to ask our guests, what do you like to read? What are you reading now? What do you read in general? What have you read in the past? In the future?
Well, I do love reading. Lately, especially when we're shooting, I'm reading scripts most of the time because we're getting so many pages. And so you end up reading a lot of screenplays. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a different form of reading, I guess, because it's highly visual and very specific. And you're looking at it in terms of television. So when I'm leisure reading, right now I'm reading a lot of graphic novels because I feel like it's a easy way to read in 10-minute bursts
right.
A lot. And I have a lot of like 10-minute breaks, so I think it's kind of fun. And I just kind of got into them lately. I'm reading The Unwritten right now, graphic novel
series.
Oh, yeah,
nice, nice.
Which is great and really fun. What else besides that? You know, I like fiction. I like a lot of good fiction. I'm trying to think of like something I read recently that was really, really interesting. I don't know. Besides that, I guess it's not even fiction, but I read Guns, Germs, and Steel not too long ago, and that was really cool. I don't know if
Who's
you guys
that
heard
I don't
that.
Know that.
No, yeah, I don't know that either.
It's really cool. It's a thick book about the argument about civilization and how we sort of landed wherever we landed based on three things that impact our world, which are guns, germs, and steel, and how different societies end up where they end up based on those factors. And it's kind of an interesting way to, in the last 13,000 years, look at human history and be like, why was I born in Chicago? What are some things that impact
Oh, that's cool.
That? Yeah.
I have a professor friend that would probably love that book, yeah.
I think it's Jared Diamond, I believe, is the author.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's pretty cool.
Did you read when you were a kid, or did you, like, comics, or...?
I did. You know, I read a little bit of comics, but not as much. My cousin and my brother started getting me into comics a little bit when I was younger. You know, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, X-Men, of course.
Okay, so Marvel kid.
Yeah. And but I wasn't a huge comic guy. I was more into... a lot of sports stuff, you know. So okay. I'd read a lot of like sports books, magazines.
The complete opposite of my life.
Are you talking? Are you talking like those terrible sports fiction for young?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
Okay.
I mean, there were some good ones.
That I read all of those.
I read the Goosebumps / like Bailey School Kids versions of those books. But I was not the sports book kid. Yeah.
Yeah. It was all those stories that are like the Bad News Bears kind of in a book version.
Yes, that's right.
You know? I think I remember those in like the library.
Yeah. Like, one of them, which I didn't read, but they just did a doc about it, was called Jake. And I've heard that one was really good. But I didn't read that one. But they were all, I think, in that world where, you know, it was the kid like me who was on the bench, you know, who could cheer the loudest, but he couldn't swing the bat, you know. So I ended up reading a lot of that. And I think because my family was so pro-reading, they were always making me read something, my grandparents, and some Polish books and things like that, too.
Cool. Righteous.
Yeah, well, Danny is half Indian and half Polish.
We like to segregate out our guests and the cast as well. We've multiple times mentioned our ethnicities and or the fact that I'm gay on the show. We like to put everybody in boxes as much as possible, just so everybody's clear as to where we're coming from.
Now that that's said, okay, you can all listen.
Yes, except for the people who don't like any of those things, then you have to go.
Then you're gonna have to. I'm sorry, but yeah, this might not be the podcast for you.
If you're anti-Indian or anti-Polish,
then you've learned some things that you need to think about today.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But maybe this is our opportunity to open people's ears.
Yeah, you know? Reach out.
Free your mind and the rest will follow.
Because the ears are probably the most direct path to the brain, right?
I feel like the nose is, isn't it?
I have no idea. Because
that's what the Egyptians would have used.
Okay, if I'm going to be... the Egyptians use a nose?
Yeah, because that's how they pulled the brain out with the little
hook. They did, you're right, with the hook thing. Okay, well, you know, I stand corrected, so... you can choose to tune out of this podcast now.
Or stick it in your nose.
So I want these people of three different ethnicities.
Yes.
Or three and a half, maybe. Two and a half? Three and a half? I don't know. I want these people of different ethnicities to come together right now and build a jingle for our book, for this book.
Okay.
So here are the words. The words of the jingle are "The Dark Domain" by Stefan Grabinski. I was very creative with the lyrics here, guys.
Okay.
It's written on the cover of the book.
It took me hours to come up with that. But we don't know what the song is actually going to be, okay? So, Danny, you're going to start out by writing, performing the melody. So you're just going to sing that any way you want it. Okay. That's going to be the melody.
Got it.
We'll let you sing it first, then we'll build on it.
Okay.
So, "The Dark Domain" by Stefan Grabinski.
"The Dark Domain" by Stefan Grabinski.
I like it.
Ooh.
That was nice.
Yeah.
That was almost just perfect on its own.
The speaking at the end. Okay, quote Cody, almost perfect on its own.
Okay.
But not quite, because it needs two more voices. So
now he's going to do it again.
Now he's going to do it again, and you're going to add some other voice to it.
Got it.
Higher or lower, whatever you want.
Got it.
"The Dark Domain" by Stefan Grabinski.
Okay. So you went low. So
I always go low.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to
when
add
in doubt,
high.
Go low.
I'm going to try to add high, but that's already pretty high for me. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
You can either find a middle track, maybe add a little bit. You can do some beatboxing. I don't know.
Okay. Maybe feel some it. Baritone.
Feel right. it.
That's
feel
what it.
It
was in college. All so right. here we go.
"The Dark Domain" by Stefan Grabinski.
Mine was weird.
No, it was good.
There was one of us that wasn't weird.
It added nice like ABC Saturday morning cartoon vibe to it, and I dug it.
There's a certain messiness that I think is actually good for this book.
Right,
and,
right.
It's a weird book.
It's a weird book.
Oh, my God.
It's a very weird book.
Opening story alone, I was like, all right, I need to take a break for a second. I just read the first story, like the first, like, what, seven pages, and I was oh, boy.
Immediately upon reading the first story, I was like, how much is lost in translation here?
Right.
Or how much of it is just, nope, it's just weird. And then after you read a few more stories in succession, you're like, no, it's just a very weird, you know, kind of psycho fantasy, interesting, exploring the, I guess, the darker realms of humanity. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, it starts with basically a rape. or like an attempted rape.
Yes.
Like,
by the way, what time period are we talking about? There doesn't really say.
Late 1800s, early 1900s. Okay. Because I mean, that's his time period.
And because right when I was reading it, I was like, this. I mean, I don't know when was the last time you're allowed to just go grab a woman and in a public place, in a, like a restaurant, in an inn.
Yeah, and she like she grazes her boob on his cheek. That was the weirdest part to me.
No,
yeah.
Her boob, I think, popped out, didn't it? Boob popped out.
It seemed like
and
it was
she
hard
didn't
to
put
tell.
It back.
Yeah,
yeah, it was like hard to tell sometimes.
I think, yeah.
How does it graze a I was trying to figure out. I was
well,
like,
he took
was
that.
Sitting.
Yeah.
He was
right,
sitting,
but I was still trying to position
she
it.
She was serving like, him, and then her cleavage. I think one of the boobs popped out and smacked him in the face, which I think he took as permission to play.
Right.
And
well, he didn't seem like a guy who needed permission to play.
No, this was a guy that was in the winter for a very long time.
Yeah.
Lost.
Yeah.
And when she actually first rebuffed him, and then she left the room, he says out loud to nobody. Bitch.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was very bitch that I just met is refusing to have sex with me.
He's probably going to save my life with nourishment and a bowl of soup.
Well, and
salt.
And not only that, but he calls her bitch after she says, I'll come back at midnight and then you can have me. So it's not
that's
even like
right.
she said no. Not that that's okay, but like she said, she didn't say no, she just said later.
Sometimes you're like, is this just playful banter? And then when you read it, you're like maybe when he was actually saying it, like his tone, maybe he had a really high voice or something to make that bitch, to lighten up that bitch.
Right. Inflection's key
it is.
Using the word bitch.
Oh, bitch, you know, but.
Yeah. Oh, bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If there was something
or like you
that,
were crazy bitch.
But yeah, it's it's very interesting. And then, of course, you know, I think like most of these things, there's just. It's not the sex doesn't go the way you think it's gonna go.
I'm not sure this
is that a moral.
Yeah,
is that a moral of this.
Yeah, the moral of the story
sex
is
never
sex
goes the way you think.
But
it's
this
gonna
one's
go.
Actually way different.
Yeah,
I mean, yes, maybe that's a general rule of sex, but this goes very differently.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And old people have firm bodies. That was another lesson I learned from the entirety of the book.
Yeah, that. Yeah, old people definitely have, and like their eyes are always like cold or something, right?
Yeah. They like, burn with blackness. I don't understand how that works.
There was,
it was some sort of weird, like it was black
maybe
while
like that
burning.
Rock. What is that, obsidian or something? That
Yeah, it's like, rock. The one from Australia. Yeah. Like, where they, yeah.
Maybe it could be like that. I don't know. Maybe
or no,
that
what
rock
is that?
I have no idea.
Oh, God. I think it's obsidian. Yeah. I'm
trying to think of what's a popular rock in Poland at the time, maybe. Oh, but he was in Ukraine.
Coal?
But coal. Maybe it's just, it is the Industrial Revolution. It's all based on coal. So
and coal does feature.
Coal
in
had
this
a
book.
Lot of power.
It does.
Yes,
yeah.
It was. Coal had a lot of power.
Because
at that
coal
time.
Powers trains.
Coal was like our iPhone.
Yeah.
That's like, that's literally. What kids played with. I mean, they put them in stockings if you were bad.
And if you were good.
And if you were so...
That was, it was a great time to be alive, because regardless of what you did for Christmas, you always got what you wanted, which was coal.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
Christmas
that's
Carol.
Right. It was
think
a good
about,
time to be poor.
Think about how important it was for, what, Cratchit to get some coal into that fire and how, you know, Scrooge was such a... He didn't want to give any of that coal.
Yeah, you say coal was the iPhone, and it kind of was. It was a means for communication in this book.
Yeah.
This fire chief, when one of the stories, communicates with fire demons, right, through coal.
Like you do.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And so let me just explain briefly how that works. After burning coal, he sees letters in the coal that are like kind of burnt into the letters. And he starts making them into shapes, or forming the letters into words, and through this way, the demons communicate with him, the fire demons.
The problem I had with that story.
Yeah?
Other than the fact that fire demons were using, like, aerial photography to draw pictures of themselves by positioning fires around the area.
Yes. Okay.
But also...
Like crop circles.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, a lot of that story really could have just been human... like puzzle making, because like the human brain is designed to notice things in things that don't exist. Like we search for patterns.
Right.
So like he's arranging his own, like letters into his own words. He's drawing lines on those maps. Like he could have drawn the lines any way and it would have been completely different. You know, he's selectively choosing those. And then, you know, without the supernatural element at the end, it would have been like, well, he's just kind of like making up things in his head, basically.
Yeah, I think that's that's what a lot of this book is.
Well, yeah,
it's a lot of making up. I think letting his imagination really go to the darkest domain. I mean, that's his whole. There were so many things where I was like, okay, well, I definitely wouldn't have expected this. And then I was like, well, that's because it's me and I'm not Stefan Kravinsky. But I think that was kind of cool. It was clear that he was using whatever was in his imagination and around him in his, you know, in his local area to kind of go to the craziest places.
Yeah. And in many of these stories, you can't really tell whether this stuff is really happening or it's just kind of this person is insane and thinks this stuff is happening.
Yeah.
Or
that's kind of a problem I had with Grabinski, though, was unlike Poe and a lot of his better stuff or like Lovecraft, where they use the first person. And so then that way you don't know if it's actually happening because the narrator becomes untrustworthy. You're not sure if it's affecting him and then he's telling it to you. These were always like a lot of these, not all of them, but a lot of them were third person omniscient narrative.
Yes.
And so it felt more like it was just actually happening, which was still creepy. But I lost a lot of the psychological, like, is it happening? Is it not happening? Because I just assumed it was all actually happening. And it was just really creepy.
Which I think in some ways, it is frustrating, but it makes it kind of for a spontaneous and fun read, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because by the time you get to the end, you're literally finishing the story about, you know, these mistresses and whether or not they existed and whose corpse is laying on this bed. And then you're like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's the ending. And then I'm like literally flipping back a couple pages being like, let's go back here. Shimoto's mistress. Let's figure out, when did Jadwiga all of a sudden, like, did she exist here? Did she not exist here? When, like, did I miss something? And so there's a lot of, like, flipping back the last two pages to be like, okay, so that's just it. It's up to you to, I guess, decipher. And
it felt a lot more like a movie or even like a screenplay because of the fact that it was third person than like an actual, like I guess, because I mean, you know, and I'm coming from a position of reading Lovecraft and Poe, and so it's like maybe I was just expecting that, and so it threw me for a little bit, and not in a negative way, but in a definitely where it just felt like, it felt like a different read while being similar. Similar but different. Like it's like, it felt like a film version of a Poe book that did not star Vincent Price.
I like wonder how much culturally he was affected by what was going on in Poland. And I'm sure that had a huge factor into this, and whether or not he could say anything, you know, because I think one of the things that looking back, you think about Grabinski is he does sort of go against most authors at the time and what most people, the intelligentsia were doing. And he was just, especially in a really devout Catholic country at the time, I think there was a lot of stuff there that was just kind of the first time this was happening, and it almost feels like free association. Just
right.
Yeah, that's right.
And well, there's a lot of that fear of like the demons and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so, I mean,
a lot of Catholic.
He too was a really serious devout Catholic, but it manifested itself differently in him. You know, he believed in demons, and he liked to write about them. He was writing at pretty much exactly the same time as Lovecraft. In fact, they died like a year apart and were born like 3 years apart. I looked online. I couldn't find any evidence that these two guys knew each other because Grabinski was basically unknown. I think very underappreciated.
And I don't think Lovecraft talked to anybody.
Well, that's true. nor did Grabinski.
I know.
Really.
Yeah, it's true. In this, I guess if you look at this style of writing, there's a good chance none of them knew they existed simultaneously. There's a lot of alone with your own thoughts. It feels like that.
Yeah.
It feels like he was definitely, and I know he was sick too, so it feels like he was, you know, literally alone with his thoughts for a lot of time.
Yeah, and he was sick his whole life.
Yeah.
He apparently got tuberculosis of the bone, which I have no idea what that really means.
Probably the worst kind.
No, it doesn't sound good.
I'm entirely unfamiliar with that as well.
I always thought tuberculosis was like a breathing, lungs coughing thing.
Yeah,
but he got tuberculosis of the bone when he was 8. He had it for the rest of his life.
Wow.
And then apparently in his like 40s, He developed regular tuberculosis.
Regular.
So was he bedridden for
and
his whole life?
Not for his whole life, but then in his 40s, he started to get really sick.
Wow.
He moved out of the city, Lvov or Lviv or
Lvov.
Whatever. I'll say it again.
Lvov.
Danny actually speaks Polish fluent.
Which is interesting because this is now currently in the Ukraine, but during this period, the borders were shifting all over the place, so I guess at the time it was a predominantly Polish city. I don't know what it is right now. I've never been there. But my grandpa was born actually in Ukraine, but he was born in Kiev.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Did he have a I didn't really read a lot of the bio on Grabinski. Did he have like a Descartes thing going on because he's so sickly he read a lot? Because like Descartes spent all of his time reading because he would just sit in bed all day.
He spent a lot of time writing, and in fact, this won't surprise you guys, even if you don't already know it. He wrote a lot at train stations.
Oh, God, it's all coming back to me now.
Yeah, this writer is obsessed with the trains.
Obsessed with the choo-choos.
He is like every young boy out there right now. he was definitely obsessed with it. I mean, at that time, too, they were sort of magical. It was a magical period in trains, in the history of trains at that time.
Well, yeah, that was that whole second story, which was really the train conductor in that second story where the guy was like, oh, the train, like, speed, quickness. Really weird.
It was like a four-page dialogue about trains.
Or like even that most recent, Wild Wild West, that was the whole impetus behind that movie, was that like the locomotive was revolutionary and was going to change everything. Wow. I don't know if you all remember Wild Wild West starring Mr. Will Smith and Kevin Kline.
I remember that.
That was the whole thing with Dr. Lovelace, was like about trains and like the future. It was that steam powered industrial revolution thing of like this is the future and power and
also
control.
Blazing Saddles.
Also Blazing Saddles. Yes. way to bring a better movie into my conversation.
Yeah, but like out of these 11 stories, I think like 3 of them take place on trains, and then like,
should I throw in a train there too? I know it's late, but I'll just say Polar Express, just so we have a group of 3.
Oh,
movies.
Nice, thank
three
you.
There you go.
And it's seasonal.
The triumvirate.
We need a winter one.
But then even in the stories that don't take place on a train, there'll be a line like, oh, by the way, this character died, was hit by a train.
It's kind of like, remember that first movie that that it was literally just a train? I don't know what the name of the movie. It might be
Unstoppable.
Is it? It's got
Are you talking about that one?
No, the very first film.
Oh,
it might be. If it's not the very first, it's definitely one of the.
No,
first
no, yeah,
ones.
I know exactly what you're talking but about. But it was the original one. I forget the name of it.
Yeah, but
it was
literally
like
a train in motion.
It was waiting at the station, and what it was, or something, and what it was a train that came at the camera, and the audience actually thought that it was going to hit them.
Many people freaked out, much like the Blair Witch Project, and ran out of the movie theater screaming.
Yeah,
it was a precursor.
I missed your preface where you said the first movie. I thought you were just saying, you know, that movie with the train. And I was like, oh, Unstoppable.
Okay. A lot of train movies for you guys to look into now.
I know we should include a.
We will put
list.
Together a link of the best train movies possible.
We'll have an IMDb list. You can go check it out.
Well, the train sequence in the Last Fast Five movie too, by the way, great action sequence.
I have not seen that. I'm gonna have to check that out.
The sequence is amazing.
We need to have a train night.
Yeah. Also, a lot of murders take place on trains in the his stories.
Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, there
throw
you go.
Throw mama off the train?
Yeah.
Or don't throw mama off the train?
Something about a train and mama.
I think it's throw.
Throw mama.
Throw mama. Yeah.
Okay. We're not, actually, by don't, the way, we're not be, recommending that.
Don't throw mama off the train would be kind of a boring movie.
Yeah. It would just be about a leisurely train ride.
Like, I could go to real life train and see people not throwing moms off trains.
Most of the time, people aren't doing that.
Yeah. Most of the time.
I think the movie needs to be a today's the day situation, right?
Yeah, it's either a slice of life or
today is the day.
Today is the day.
Yeah, throwing mom off the train will make it today's the day.
Yeah,
that's your writing lesson for today, everybody.
take that to the bank.
Okay, so here's a fun sentence in the book.
Okay.
Slowly, a legend developed in connection with the gravedigger Giovanni Tassotti. Now nicknamed John Hyena. And then it doesn't explain why he's nicknamed John Hyena.
Oh, it just says
Yeah, it's just now nicknamed John Hyena.
I wonder if that's a lost in translation like Danny was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Maybe. Now, to be fair, later on in the story, like several pages later, you kind of figure out why he's nicknamed that. But at the time, I was like, okay, I assume they're going to explain why, and they didn't. So what I want us three to do is the three of us are going to make up a story one word at a time.
Oh, God.
And the title of this story is How Giovanni Tassotti, the Gravedigger, Became Nicknamed John Hyena. Okay?
Okay. One word at a time?
One word at a time. It doesn't really have to have anything to do with this story. Okay. So okay. we can just make it up.
All right.
Okay. So all the only fact is there's a gravedigger named Giovanni Tosati. We're going to tell everyone how he was nicknamed John Hyena.
Okay.
One rule about this, just to make the logistics clear, you can say period, and then that does not count as your word.
Okay.
Great.
Okay?
So you can say it either like say it and then say a word, or you can say a word and then say period.
Great.
To end a sentence. Okay. So I'll start.
Good.
Once
upon
a
time
there
was
a
man
named
Giovanni.
Period. I forgot his last name. What do you want from me? He
lost
several
hundred
bodies
while
he
ate
sandwiches. Period.
So
he
went
to
Poland
to
find
his
several
hundred
sandwiches. Period.
But
he discovered
a
lion. Period.
Giovanni
got
his
lion's
mane
caught
in
a
trap. Period.
Okay, now we're getting to John Hyena here.
Yeah, yeah, we're going to get there, guys. look,
I threw a lion in there. I think we're halfway there. All right, come
on. That's true.
Let me know when you just want a sentence, and I'll break the rules here. Okay. Giovanni
broke
the
trap
and
stabbed
hyenas.
Period.
Period.
Should we end it there?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that is sufficient reason for people to start calling him John Hyena.
It also, right? frankly, sounds like part of the book anyway. Yeah. I'm just saying. It's disconnected enough while also being odd and
by the way,
this rambly.
This follows all of Grabinski's rules, by the way. You think you're going to go one way. The only thing that we're missing is some coal and a train.
Exactly.
But you think we're going to go some way. There's a murder.
Right.
You think that the lion has something to do with hyenas. But no, the lion is not a hyena.
Well, yeah. Okay. Now, well, here's the way Grabinski would have ended it, though.
Yeah.
After he stabbed the hyena, then he would have had the same wound. And
yeah.
he would have realized the hyena was somehow him.
Yes.
I thought
yes.
it was going to be that the hyena was actually the sandwiches.
That
okay.
could
yeah,
have worked as well.
Well, we don't know yet right now. Right now, that's...
That's true. We have to
observer.
Go. We have to go back and read.
Yeah, we have to...
we'll have to find out.
We'll have to wiki that.
Yeah.
Wiki the story of John Hyena.
Oh, my God. All right. So, Danny, this is the first time you read this, right?
Yep.
Did you have a favorite story?
Let me look quick. I've actually... this was actually a cool assignment for me because I've never heard of Grabinski. And, I mean, to be totally honest, I was never a huge... Poe reader. I mean, I've read some of his stuff just because mm-hmm. I think we all had to.
Casco Bandiato, probably. That was a big one in high school, early high school.
I think the one
with the niter. Come, I have this cask of Amontillado.
Bearing him
yeah.
behind the wall.
Yeah. So it was kind of cool to like look back and see like a Polish version of that, and also just kind of go back into this world where immediately I'm sort of drawn into this Tim Burton landscape,
yeah.
but a lot darker.
a lot darker.
And a little bit more twisted.
He's missing the whimsy of Burton.
Yeah.
a lot of the whimsy of Burton.
There's only a little bit of whimsy in this book. There's like a pinch of whimsy.
I'm trying to look back and see which one of my favorite stories.
And it's forceful whimsy.
Yeah, I think... I think Shimota's Mistress is probably my favorite story. And I don't know about when I say favorite, but I should say the one that at least, you know, stuck out to me the most, or the one I feel I remember most.
Okay.
That's funny because in my notes about that story, mm-hmm. I have this little phrase that I wrote.
Yeah.
About masturbation? Question mark.
Immediately, I see these notes. Shimoto's mistress about masturbation? Question mark. And that's probably why I remember this story the most.
Yeah, this is a story, just to very briefly summarize it. It's about a man who's basically obsessed with this woman, but she does not know he exists. And then he suddenly starts getting basically love letters from her, mm-hmm. which he cannot explain. And then they start having meetings once a week where they have sex. So he's in, like, paradise. And then it gets really weird and creepy after that.
Yeah, it's like one shade of gray.
the darkest, creepiest shade of gray.
It is like strangely erotic writing, right? I would say,
yeah.
And it's pretty erotic, and but it's also confusing, and it's shaped as if pages from a diary. I believe, is that right?
Well, it's first person. It's not necessarily pages from a diary.
It's one of the few first person.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Danny, do you and I have the same edition?
Yes, we do.
Hey, yeah. Can you turn to page 65 in yours?
Sure. Okay.
And I want you to read a little bit of this erotic stuff, if you don't mind, from this story.
Yeah. What?
let's see. About halfway down the page, it says, "I knelt on the carpet."
That's it.
Okay, read some of that.
Sure. Yeah. Enjoy, everybody. Cozy up. I knelt on the carpet by her feet, laying my head on her knees. She embraced it in a warm, maternal movement.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to interrupt you.
Yep.
Because...
Sorry about that.
I think it's time for our sexy voice contest.
Oh, God.
All right.
Okay.
This was not the passage I had chosen for you for the sexy voice contest, but given the content of it, I kind of think you should do it in your sexiest voice possible. Actually, you know what? You and I should go first, Cody.
Right. Let's save him for a laugh. Yeah.
So hold on a sec, Dan.
You got it.
Yeah, move over, bud.
Okay.
Runjit,
easy, guys.
Runjit has to get into his stance.
Actually, go
weirdly
ahead.
Aggressive in here.
Go ahead and, guys, get out your notes for the sexy voice contest. So, Cody, you're going to go first. Sexy voice contest. This is from the same story, by the way, with the fire chief.
Yes, this is from Vengeance
messages
of the Elements
and the Coals.
Which, by the way, the fire chief one reminded me a lot of a Ray Liotta movie I once saw on television about a fireman who started fires and then was writing a book about it.
Huh.
I don't
was
know why
TV
I saw that
movie.
Movie. I don't even know. I just know it was Ray Liotta.
And there was no train in the movie?
There was no train. Oh. I know. Well, surprising.
And I'm not interested. Sorry.
Yeah, I am completely.
No, screw that.
I wasn't really paying a lot of attention because of the lack of the train, so I don't know. All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, Cody Melcher, his sexiest voice.
And this is from pages 97 and 98 from Vengeance of the Elementals. These were the shapes of short, funny beings, child freaks, animals. Little monkeys with long, playfully turned tails. Agile, bow-legged squirrels. Extremely hideous talapoins. A multitude.
It's a type of monkey. I looked it up.
A multitude of grotesque figures. Incomplete forms. Vague heads. Fragments of trunks. Parts of arms. And legs, segments of hairy, spread out paws, interspersed with half-twisted figures, mangled things, and tentacled growths.
Bravo.
Yeah.
Do we,
do we clap?
Oh, I don't know. What do I do? What,
no, that's good. Well, yeah.
That was great.
As I know I've said this before, but I have to mention it.
Yeah.
Your sexy voice always sounds like Orson Welles.
Yeah.
I grew up on Orson Welles.
I figured. I was going to say, here's the only thing I pictured immediately was once the Earth is taken over by aliens, the alien leader is going to come here and make a announcement or to himself have this sort of monologue. And that I pictured that as the alien leader's monologue to himself, staring at all the humans around him. Being prepared to be led by aliens. So
I like it.
I want you to know you created a very striking visual for me.
Thank you, Danny. I appreciate
that. Awesome.
That.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that's the exact visual you were attempting to create, right?
That was it precisely.
Yeah.
Down to the letter. All right. So Runjit.
I will be reading a passage from the story Strabisma.
Of course.
Strabismus, which means cross-eyedness.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Danny, how would I pronounce the name Brzechwa? B-R-Z-E-C-H-W-A?
Brzechwa.
Okay,
just sneeze a little.
Brzechwa really is what I'm going to say. Wait, say it one more time. I want everyone to hear the correct pronunciation.
I believe it. I mean, I'm taking a little bit of a guess here, too, but I believe it's Brzechwa.
Okay, I can't possibly say that. So, Brzechwa it is.
Let's give a little cough.
His name was Brzechwa. Joseph Brzechwa. What a name. Something about it fastens and hooks onto the nerves, irritating them with its grating resonance. He was cross-eyed. He especially saw poorly out of his right eye, which peered out in a stone gaze under ruddy lashes. Telltale heart, anybody?
I feel like that wasn't part of the actual
thing. That was not. That was my footnote. Yeah. My snarky footnote. I'm going to do that. I'm going to start doing snarky footnotes as a thing.
Nice.
His small, brick-colored face grimaced perpetually in a malicious sneer. A tiny, rusty mustache twirled rakishly upward, moved constantly like the pincers of a poisonous scarabaeus. Sharp, stinging evil. End.
Runjit's sexy voice always builds to climax.
Yeah. He finishes. Always, he always finishes when he starts.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so glad that you went right after Cody, because let's go back. I'm still with my striking visual of alien life forms taking over Earth, and it is a really scary, rapturous scene outside. And that, to me, was the last human in many movies, Saving Private Ryan. You know, you're having that final speech or memory before you die while you're being cradled by, you know, a loved one. And that, to me, felt like the last memory of that, of, I don't know, strabismus or whoever it was. So I want you to know that that also was... It did feel like you were dying in that.
That is awesome. Yeah.
Now, dying for some lemon.
Yeah.
Danny, I have a different passage that I had actually chosen originally for you to read that I think is better for the sexy voice contest. So it's bottom.
Oh, yeah. I have it right here.
Oh, you got it? Yep. Okay.
Okay, cool. So, this is also from Strabismus. And I guess...
Oh, let me set this up very briefly. Okay. Mm-hmm. Get into the narrator starts hearing like things, noises... beyond this wall in his house, like in this little compartment area. And he decides to break through to find what's in there. And now this is just after he's broken through and stepped into this little unknown room.
So just want to say I apologize in advance to all the people who are going to be offended, appalled, scared.
And turned on.
And to those few people who are turned on, thank you very much. I really appreciate this. I need this. Here we go. The corner of the little room, squeezed between two walls, crouched some human figure, staring at me with a piercing, greenish look. Drawn by the magnetic power of his gaze, I advanced. The figure straightened up, grew. I cried out. It was Brzechwa. He stood silent and still, only his mustache twitched slightly. Suddenly, he inclined himself in my direction, leaned against my chest, and entered me. Vanishing inside without a trace.
Ooh.
I don't like it.
What do you guys think?
That was a different kind of sexy.
By the way,
That was good. That was straightforward.
I really held in my surprise at some at the twist of that paragraph because I did not read this story. If I'm being totally honest here. So trying to maintain the same pitch and tone when all of a sudden you scroll down and you have to say entered me. I fought for that, guys. I want you guys to know that I fought for that. So.
I think it played well.
It did. That was the film noir narrator sexiness.
Yeah.
It was this guy's in charge.
To continue the narrative, I feel like that was the closing voiceover Like after that, after that man is being like carted away or taken off,
definitely
that last human. This is his like closing narration. That's happening in his head as the film fades out.
Oh, that's it's like a spirit or a soul, kind of like you know,
in his head or from beyond the grave.
Yeah,
like you know, Charlton Heston at the end of the Omega Man.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Everyone, you know, everyone's favorite.
Yeah, we all can agree on that, right? The Omega Man. It's a sleeper cup from Runge It right there. That's great.
I was like, Charlton Heston, which one? Oh, boy.
That was fun. Thanks, guys.
I don't know. Thank you. I'm glad. I hope there was sufficient. I think there was a good enough difference between all of us that I feel like everybody in the audience got a little something, right?
And I think that's the thing, too, because you all have your different preferred sexy voice, you know,
right,
out there. So why not give you guys some choices?
Beauty is in the ear of the beholder.
Nice.
Runjit, your favorite was the last one, right? I forget the name of it.
The Glance.
Yeah, that was your favorite one, right?
Yeah, Glance was... Yeah, this guy in The Glance, this guy's got issues, let's just say. What happens here, basically, the love of his life gets killed. Anybody want to guess how she dies?
Train?
I think it's a train. Is it a train?
Yep, it's a train. The love of his life gets murdered by a train, basically gets run over by a train. And he is haunted by what the last thing that happened, because she left the house and left the front door open and then got murdered by train and he never saw her again. But she never left the door open. This was the first time ever that she had left the house and left the front door open. Mm. So he gets obsessed with doors and obsessed with what's on the other side of doors, kind of like a cat.
Right? Yes, exactly. Like
except in a way creepier way.
Right. I used to have an OCD about that, about doors.
Oh.
Yeah.
In what way?
I used to have to check doors all the time and like make sure that they're like, and I would have to open them and see, I don't know. It was a lot of opening and closing of doors. I still kind of have it with keeping doors opened and closed and with locks.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Because I have OCD, but
it
changes as I've gotten older.
Okay. Yeah. I love doors. I've always been fascinated by them. This is kind of cool. It's the whole Alice in Wonderland kind of
like a portal.
Yeah. Lion, Witch, and a Wardrobe. It's all that. What's on the other side of that door?
The TARDIS. Cool.
Now, in this story, it's not quite so sunny.
Surprise.
He thinks there are like evil beings out there who are going to murder him. So this becomes like very debilitating. And then eventually it progresses to corners. He can't stop thinking that there's something evil around every corner. So he starts walking in wide circles wherever he goes so that he doesn't have to round corners. And then it progresses to stuff behind him. He's convinced that there's like evil things behind him. Okay. So, he does this. This is really a funny moment in this book, in the story. He starts saying, anytime he wants to turn around, he does this. He calls out, "I'm going to turn around now." And then he waits like 5 seconds to give whatever evil thing it is behind him a chance to hide, and then he turns around.
That's amazing.
Isn't that awesome?
This I kind of want to make a movie about that. I really do. Yeah. And this falls under fair use because it's the copyright's out. Mm-hmm. So I'm totally janking this. I'm taking it. It's mine now.
This is the one story, I think, or one of the few that had some humor in it.
Yeah.
Like, there were funny moments, including that description.
Going to turn around. That's great. I think he doesn't, you know, I like that he doesn't play favorites. He's like, I'll give you a chance, too. I understand you have your needs. Have your needs, just like a train has its needs to sometimes, you know, run into stuff.
Right.
Like, I have my needs, you have yours. I will allow you to, you know... to live your life. I think that's pretty fair.
That was my favorite thing.
He's a fair and just man.
He waits. He's very considerate to the evil beings that are out to destroy him.
He lets them gather their things, get all of his stuff together.
I'll give you 5 seconds.
I'll give you 5 seconds.
Head start.
And then I'm turning around.
And then, spoiler alert, at the end, he decides, hey, what if right now I just go ahead and look behind without warning whoever it is? And so he does. He suddenly turns around and then he screams and falls dead.
See, now I feel like that's his fault, though, because he had set up a mechanism with whatever it was, and then they were surprised, because, like, if he had just started with always turning around, maybe it'd have been fine. They had a deal, and
they
he
had
broke
an agreement.
They did have an agreement.
They had a gentleman's agreement.
Break that contract.
Yeah, you know? They had a gentleman's agreement. And
I was going to say unspoken, but it was almost kind of spoken in
a
way.
It was very loudly spoken.
Yeah, like, so people around could even hear.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right, so here's, I want to depart from the book for just a moment here. All right, Danny, you may remember that years ago, maybe 10 years ago or so, you and I got together and wrote some stand-up, like I was writing some stand-up for me,
sure.
You were writing for you, and mm-hmm. we were kind of running ideas by each other. Well, I looked through my files and found some notes.
Oh, great.
Found some of Danny's old stand-up jokes.
Here it comes, all right, the dark domain.
From like 10 years ago. So, Cody, you have notes on this as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's under the title Danny's Old.
Well, yeah, Danny's Old.
But it's short for Danny's Old Stand-Up.
A lot of train jokes
Danny,
coming,
if you want to pull
see.
That file up, sure. You have it there somewhere buried in your notes.
Oh, great.
And so here's what we're going to do. Now, it's weird to do stand-up without an audience, so Cody and I are going to do the rim shots. Okay?
Oh, sweet. Okay,
so
great.
So after each punchline, we're going to do a rim shot, and Cody, this is kind of notated in your notes a little bit. And we're just going to hear a few of Danny's stand-up jokes from like 10 years ago, Danny?
Sure.
Something like that?
Yeah, this is, I don't even remember, but yeah, that sounds right about right.
Yeah. Okay. So here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Here it is.
All right, here we go. Again, much like my sexy voice, I really apologize for what is coming now. So just remember, we're all hoping to grow and advance as humans, so forgive me. And probably forgive my mom and family.
This sounds a lot like the way I set up my shows that I do now.
That's right.
All right, we're all trying to come on. We're all trying to grow.
And before we actually start, for the rim shot, Cody, I'll do this. And you do... Or whatever that is. Okay.
Okay.
So here we go.
All right, guys. Here are some Danny Pudi stand-up jokes circa 2003-2004. You will not enjoy. For years, my mom forced me to take Polish dance lessons. Finally, when I turned 30, I said enough is enough.
Prompt.
I once worked at a hot dog stand as a hot dog vendor's assistant. I got paid in ketchup packets. But unfortunately, for every 3 ketchup packets I earned, Uncle Sam took one.
Brunch.
I tried to like build in 2 laugh beats there.
Yeah, I saw that.
See how bad that was?
I saw that.
And
I feel
nothing.
Like, I don't know if this is normal.
Maybe I'll get a pity laugh for ketchup packets.
I don't know if this is normal for the way that you would have performed these, but the way you're doing it now, I feel like you should be like smoking a cigarette while you do them. Like,
the saddest part is that I didn't play it that way. Yeah. And now I'm like, maybe I should have. Maybe
the way you're pacing
it's
very
like
Edward R. Murrow. Like, I'm just going to smoke a cigarette.
That was the best pause, though.
Yeah.
I got paid in ketchup packets.
I was not afraid.
Cricket.
I'm turning around now.
I was not afraid to face my fear and make you all suffer with me. All right, here's another joke. Here we go. All right, y'all want to hear a Polish joke? Pan, pani i wnuczek poszli do restauracji. Pan mówił do pani, chcesz jeść? I wnuczek poszedł do domu.
Prompt. That was one of my favorite of your jokes.
And actually, I actually polished that joke. And I'm going to be totally honest. And that joke got better. So I'm going to do the joke over in the way I remember polishing it. There was a joke polished to this one.
Are you sure
right?
you didn't polish
it? We punched
it
up. We punched it up. Oh! We joked. That was a good
English.
But Cody, you get one from me. Okay.
Thank you, Danny.
I'm going to do the punched up version of that joke. Okay. Hey, you guys want to hear a Polish joke? Wait, let me do it again. Sorry. Okay. All right. This is the much improved Polish joke. Ready? You guys want to hear a Polish joke? Jak pan włoży majtki? Brązowy w tył, żółty w przodu!
You're right. That is better.
It's got an Arsenio in
there. It's got a little bit of like it. And it's quicker, and it's actually a Polish joke, which I think is good, because the joke is about how did a man put on his underwear, brown in the back, yellow in front. So I thought that's like, I know. It's not a great joke in any way. But, you know, there's a layer to it. I learned, guys.
I like it.
And the cadence works.
It lets you know that it was a joke at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
That's great.
I'm glad we dissected that joke pretty well.
Good.
This is my favorite joke, Runjit, that It's not great, but here's my favorite one. Okay. So, yeah, I'm half Indian and half Polish, which means that during the day I run a convenience store, and at night I clean it.
Yeah.
And that one was my favorite one. When I was reading through them. Yeah.
That's a good. That's actually a really good joke.
That was
a super good joke.
That was the only one, I think, that I'm still kind of proud of.
Yeah, no, I think that one's...
No, I like that one.
I think
that
you should be
lot.
Proud of that one.
Yeah.
Okay, in honor of today's book and author, I would like to hear the Polish National Anthem song. Cody, you know how to sing the Polish National Anthem?
I do not.
Damn.
I know. You.
Hey, guys. Guys.
You think.
Guys.
Yeah?
Hey, guys.
Yeah, Danny?
I think I could sing part of it for you.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I can.
You wait. Danny Pudi knows how to sing the Polish national anthem.
Just give it a shot.
I'm glad you happened to be here when Renjit needed someone to sing the Polish national anthem.
Okay, I don't believe it.
Dark domain. I think it was probably off.
Oh, that was the jingle. I thought he was starting. Okay.
So yeah, I'll give you guys a little taste of the Polish national anthem.
Nice. There we go. Danny Pudi singing the Polish national anthem.
Jeszcze Polska nie zginęła, kiedy my żyjemy. Co nam obca przemoc wrzeła, szablon odbierzemy. Marsz, marsz, Dąbrowski, z ziemi włoskiej do Polski, za twoim przewodem złączym się z narodem.
Yay! Were you naming people in there? Are those names?
Yeah. What exactly
does like Dombrowski?
What's it about? What's the impetus for the?
The Polish national anthem is also has a little bit of what's his name? Stefan Grabinski's sort of tragic outlook. It's a darker song. I mean,
yeah.
The first line is Jeszcze Polska nie zginęła, which means Poland is still exists. It hasn't been gone. Poland has in terms of history, you know, it's been off the map numerous times. It's been invaded. And so I think there's an extreme sense of nationalism and pride. And because of that, because, you know, they've had to have that. So it's a proud song, you know.
Wow.
But I remember we had to learn it in Polish school all the time when we were kids. So
I'm prefacing this. This is not an insult. It's just an observation. But somebody may take it because it's a national anthem. It sounded a lot like the Engelbert Humperdinck song from the last Eurovision contest, a little bit. Like, it had moments where it sounded very croonery.
Oh, really?
And that may have just been your inflection.
That might have been just me. I think that's just me, like, it up.
Yeah. There was definitely, like, the ending. There was some, in the middle, there was some, like, ooh, like, moments.
Yeah, no, that's
I don't
me.
Know.
That's
and
all...
I'm also probably the only person who saw the Engelbert Humperdinck song in Eurovision.
That's
who
me.
Remembers
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's me trying to be Belle Biv DeVoe meets Polish national anthem, because that's how I learned it.
It was very
beautiful. In the early 90s in Chicago. So that's my take on it.
So, in sum, what did you guys take away from the book, or what did you think of it in sum?
Don't wander around Poland near trains in the winter. Big one. That was encompassing a lot of stories.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Announce yourself before you turn around.
Mm-hmm.
Another one.
And then wait 5 seconds.
Wait 5 seconds. Yeah, you gotta wait. That's the important part. Shit gets real, real fast. And then surreal, even faster.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. I definitely gained a real appreciation for this writer.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is very underappreciated. I thought this was...
Totally
there were
great.
Some great stories in this book. A lot of the books we read, I think, suck. But they're fun to discuss, but they suck.
Thanks, Marge.
You know. But this one, I can honestly recommend... to our listeners, read this book. I think it's a really good book.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I think the stories are... have all kind of fun twists. You definitely go down some weird paths. I think some things that I took away from it was sex gets weird. Just does.
That was that lesson from the first story.
Yeah, this guy is not afraid to just go there. I think really whenever you meet anybody new in your life, make sure that they're a real person. Don't be afraid to ask them if they're a figment of your imagination. Don't be afraid to ask them if they're after anything in your life. I would do that. And then anytime somebody leaves a room or goes through one door, just kind of wait around and keep your eyes open to see who comes out of that door. I would say that. Pay attention to doors. Ask people if they're real or not. Those are some things I learned.
Always travel with another person that you can constantly verify things with. Is this real? Is this person real? Is that door real? Is this happening? Good.
Yeah. Don't be afraid to wait to have sex is another thing I learned from this.
Yeah. I was wondering about that because I was like, you know, for a Catholic writer, it's a lot of sex, but maybe it's a hidden message.
I think there was a little bit of, you know.
Yeah, because in this story, the sex never resulted in good consequences.
It was never good, you know? And I think sometimes, like, don't be afraid to have a good relationship with someone and build towards something. I think that's what I took from it. So I think there's a play on that. Yeah.
Good thought. Danny, do you have anything coming up? It's almost February. Yeah. Anything coming up early in February, perhaps, that you want to plug?
I'm glad you asked. Yeah, February 7th, Community Premieres, Season 4. So we're cool. Pretty excited.
Ooh, NBC?
And, yeah, NBC. Mm-hmm. We'll be
season 4 premiere.
Thursday night. And I'm really excited. So I'm hoping you guys could tune in. If not, you can catch up on Hulu. And yeah, we got 13 episodes coming up. And it's a fun season. There's a lot of cool things that we're doing this year that we haven't done yet, which is fun. And obviously there's been some changes behind the scenes, but overall, I'm really excited about what we've created. So it'll be fun.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. All right. Danny and I are going to take a quick trip down memory lane. We used to work together in a sketch comedy group called Stir Friday Night, all Asian sketch comedy. And this is one of our favorite sketches we used to do from those years. And it is called Who's the Bowler? And lights up.
Hey, Ranjit.
Hey there, Danny.
Are all these people going to attend the cricket match today?
Yes, Danny, they certainly are.
Oh, it's going to be one whopper of a match.
Yes, it should be.
Hey, Ranjit. I understand they made you the manager of the Calcutta cricket team this year.
Yes, Danny, they certainly did.
So you are the new manager?
I am the new manager.
Well, I never met the guy, so you'll have to tell me their names. So when I meet them on the street or at the cricket field, I'll be able to say hello to them.
Oh, I'll tell you the guy's names, but you know, strange as it may seem, they give cricket players nowadays very peculiar names.
Funny names?
Yes, funny names. Now, on the Calcutta cricket team, who is the bowler? What is the captain? I don't know, as the deputy.
You are the manager?
Yes.
You know the guy's names?
Of course I do.
Well, then tell me the guy's names.
Okay, who is the bowler? What is the captain? I don't know, is the deputy.
You are the manager?
Yes. I am the manager.
You know the guy's names?
I'm telling you their names.
But then who is the bowler?
Yes.
Go ahead and tell me.
Who?
The bowler.
Who?
The guy who bowls.
Who?
The bowler.
Who is the bowler?
What are you asking me for? I'm asking you.
I'm not asking you, I'm telling you.
You're not telling me anything. I'm asking you who is the bowler.
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who?
Who is the guy who bowls?
That is the man's name.
That is whose name?
Yes.
Who?
That is the man's name.
That is whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Who is the bowler?
What are you asking me for? I am asking you, who is the bowler?
Yes.
Okay, what is the guy's name who bowls?
No, what is the captain?
I'm not asking you who is the captain.
Who is the bowler?
That is what I'm asking you. I'm asking you a simple question. What is the guy's name who bowls?
What is the captain?
I don't know.
He's the deputy.
When you pay the bowler every week, who gets the money?
Every rupee of it.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, look, you've got to pay money to the bowler, correct?
Correct.
Does he give you a receipt?
Sure.
How does he sign the receipt?
Who?
The guy you pay.
Who?
The guy who gets the money.
Who?
The guy you give the money to.
That is how he signs it.
That is how who signs it?
Yes.
Go ahead and tell me.
That's it.
That's who?
Yes.
When you give the guy the money, doesn't he have to sign the receipt?
Of course.
Well, how does he sign it?
Who?
The guy you get the money to. You have to give the guy a receipt, right?
Yes, and who signs it?
What are you asking me for? The guy signs the receipt, right?
Yes.
When you look at the guy's name on the receipt, how does it look to you?
Who?
How does it look to
who?
You? To you?
Who?
You!
Who?
You!
Who?
So who gets the money?
Yes, and why not? The man is entitled to it.
Who is?
Yes.
So who gets it?
And why shouldn't he? After all, the man earns it.
Who does?
Absolutely. Ah, sometimes his wife Lakshmi comes and collects it.
Ah, whose wife is Lakshmi?
That is correct.
Who's Lakshmi's husband?
Correct.
Well, all I'm trying to find out is, what is the guy's name who bowls?
Oh, no. What is our leading batsman?
I'm not asking you who is our leading batsman.
No, what is the leading batsman? Who is the bowler?
One position at a time, please.
Well, then stop changing the fellas around.
I'm not changing any fellas around.
Take it easy.
All I want to know is, who is the bowler?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Calcutta has good fielders.
Oh, absolutely.
The wicketkeeper's name?
Why?
I don't know. I just thought I'd ask.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Then tell me, who's the wicketkeeper?
Who is the bowler?
I'm not asking about the bowler. The wicketkeeper's name.
Why?
Because.
Oh, he is an umpire.
Wait a minute. Does the Calcutta cricket team have an all-rounder?
Of course we've got an all-rounder.
Tell me the all-rounder's name.
Tomorrow.
You don't want to tell me right now?
I'm telling you right now.
Well, go ahead.
Tomorrow.
What time?
What time what?
At what time tomorrow you're going to tell me who's the all-rounder?
Now listen, who is not the all-rounder?
I will break your arm if you say who's the bowler. I want to know, what is the bowler's name?
What is the captain?
I don't know.
Deputy.
Okay, let's say the cricket match is about to begin. I pick up the ball and I throw it to the bowler. Now who has it?
Yes.
Who has it?
Yes.
I throw the ball to who?
That is correct.
But I don't even know what I'm talking about.
But you are correct. Who is the bowler?
I have no idea who's the bowler.
Yes, you do. You're saying it right now.
What am I saying?
Who is the bowler?
Okay. I throw the ball to who? Whoever it is drops the ball. The batsman runs to the other wicket. Who picks up the ball, throws it to Y. The ball goes past Y, and Tomorrow picks up the ball and throws it back to Y.
Why?
I don't know, and I don't care.
What was that?
I said I don't care.
Ah, he is our groundskeeper.
No, no!
And lights fade out.
Scene,
and
scene. Wow.
That was fun. That was fantastic. Sorry, there were a couple of typos in there. That was fun.
Boy, trip down memory lane. That is my favorite sketch. It's always a treat to perform that with Runjit.
That was fun. We've done that one all over the country. It always got a big reaction.
And yeah, it's so fun to play, too, because you get so confused. And the minute you start thinking about where you are, you lose everything.
You lose everything.
So you just do it. It's one of those sketches that I think if we even like stop and like reset, we're done.
We're done.
Oh, so
that
fun.
Was great. Thank you.
Thank you. It was fun.
Thanks, guys.
No. All right. Well, this is it. This is the end. Thanks for coming out, Danny. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on Tomfoolery, guys.
Thank you so much, Danny. Thanks for coming.
All right.
Looking forward to season 4, and we'll catch you later.
Yeah. Peace. All right. This has been Tomfoolery. Pros before hoes.
Pros before hoes, everybody.
Oh.
Out.